Afternoon, there we go. Hard start. Oh man. Okay, we're not gonna say this is Shades of Things to come, but
no, it's
this
gonna be a
might
great
be
show.
Turn four at the car races, so don't change the channel just yet. Oh my gosh. You are listening to We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got pretty much everything you want when it comes to John Deere products. Go up and check them out. They've got tractors, mowers, all the new electric products. They also handle the Ego line of electric, and they've got a ton of inventory. So go up and see them. They'll make you a great deal. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, or you can get them online at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
So, we've sort of been on hiatus a lot. I've actually been working a lot, despite the things you heard in the last hour. People in elected office and people who work for people in elected office are really busy working for their constituents. Go figure that out.
Yeah. Kind of like what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. But it hogs up a lot of time, and it doesn't stop at 5 o'clock, and it doesn't stop because it's Saturday.
Well, if you don't work for your constituents, you'll have more time to Facebook and...
Yes, promote yourself and look really important.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So look like you're getting something done.
So if you're enamored with a political figure who spends a tremendous amount of time promoting themselves and emailing you for fundraising...
Yeah, what aren't they doing?
You should probably take a look at what kind of... Let's see. No, the rule of thumb is never confuse activity with accomplishment, and that is true everywhere. So, lots going on in the big world. Lots going on in the big world, except our friend Harry Booyans isn't on yet, but he'll be on here shortly. We have not spoken with him since,
yes,
oh my gosh.
A long time.
Yeah. I don't know. 2021, I guess. Been a long time.
Oh, it hasn't been that long, has it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, been a long time. You can find archives. I've got archives on South Africa, going way back. South Africa is really a cautionary tale. Let's see. Hold on here. He's calling me, but not the station. So that's not going to work. All right. Back to reality here. I was going to read you something, but I didn't have it up on my screen yet. So, Dr. Harry Booyans, and if you haven't listened to previous shows with him, he is so much fun to listen to. He's got a million stories. He's really smart. And bottom line is, South Africa is very much a cautionary tale for America. And so, I don't usually do titles like this for the show, but I just kind of lifted it from one of the emails he sent me, and he said it focuses on what South Africa's journey can teach the United States, given that the Democrats are so desperately trying to turn the USA into South Africa. And for a lot of people, they're like, I don't think we have anything in common. Yeah, well, we do. And if that is news to you, please do listen to listen to today, but delve back into some of the previous shows with Dr. Booyans. He has got the historical perspective. He's written a massive book on it. It's really interesting. And you think like, well, you know, how long have the white people been in South Africa? Well, let's see. His ancestors go back 360 years in South Africa. They came there. They were Dutch. So, he lives with his family currently in Vancouver, Canada. He has been a scientist basically his whole life. And, exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. His career included interaction with the United States and British defense establishments, and he applied his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy, and And it's interesting, but this is totally true. Writes with factual accuracy and engaging style on all of these different subjects. Hard Evidence is a trademark of his work, and it's won him a number of awards. He's focused on making Americans aware of what's happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general, and the United States of America in particular. What we've learned from him is that South Africa is the United States if we would have lost to the British. And it's really funny. We don't think about that. What if we did lose to the British? Well, you know, look at South Africa and you can see the unfortunate turn of events that has taken. They are currently just struggling on every single front. His book is Amabulu, AmaBhulu, and I have that listed on our page at wethepeopleradio.us. It's a really easy book to follow. It's all done in little snippets. It's 630 pages long, by the way. And he goes through piece by piece by piece all the different things that have happened. We did a show with him when they were toppling statues. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when they were toppling the statues here in the U.S.
Yeah, he said that was very familiar to him.
That is something that was imported from South Africa.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, easy for me to choke on. Anyway, and he, in those shows about the statues that we have in the archive, by the way, all the archives are commercial free and free to listen to, and, you know, please feel free to share them. We don't copyright any of that. We're happy for you to use it however you'd like. But we had pictures of the same guy in South Africa with a different sign, and same guy was here doing the same thing. So there are really, really close ties between the political things happening in both places. And unfortunately, we don't hear much about it here, which I'm sure is by design.
Well, absolutely. The media doesn't want to focus on unpleasantness going on.
No. So it sounds like we've got him on Skype today. So, you know, we're doing some engineer. Oh, maybe we're not doing that. Christina, I saw just shaking her head. However, we're doing it.
Unfortunately, we have some issues with the Skype, but we have Dr. Harry on the phone.
Okay.
He's already connected.
Nice. Well,
all right.
The infamous Dr. Booyans from a blast from the past, how the heck are you?
I'm fine, Aaron. I think I can hear Bo there in the distance. He's booming outside, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear.
Yeah, we always have these little connection puzzles.
Like I predicted, Skype would let us down.
Oh, of course.
There it is. He tells me on my side that everything is fine and that all the audio is good and everything is great. But when I click on the links that your good people provide, it says, oops, we appear to have a problem.
We've gotten lucky with WhatsApp before. So I don't know if in the future that's a thing we could try, but that's, let's see, we spoke with someone in Australia on WhatsApp, so I don't know about Canada. You know, you're like the closest far away guy we have, and yet...
Can't seem to make the link.
There's always a problem.
I know. It's like the gods are against us. So I kind of gave people a little backstory on you, and I stole part of your email that you sent me and used that for the title for the show. You know, a focus on what South Africa's journey can teach the United States, given the Democrats are desperately trying to turn the USA into South Africa.
Yeah.
So
that's how I perceive it. But I do need to tell the folks who are listening that not a word of what Aaron has said about me can be true.
Yeah, no, it's probably all fake. He's just a guy living in his mom's basement. Oh, no, that's somebody else. That was not popular. That wasn't popular when you were a kid or when we were kids. Living in your mom's basement and trying to be a big deal is a new phenomenon.
These days the kids can't escape the basement because they can't afford one brick on top of the other or two pieces of wood stuck together to call a house.
Yeah. It's not not a pretty picture. So you had listed just so many different things that we could talk about. So I have no agenda. Full disclosure, I have no agenda. It's all you.
Yeah, I got a handful of notes that I scribbled here in the last 2 hours, and they're weird the way I got them down here, because it says New World Order, which is something that my American friends always ask me about, World Economic Forum, which came home in a big thud in Canada, the Anglo-American Establishment, the only book on that general subject that I trust, the ever-present George Soros, or better known as Georgi Schwartz, his open society, and why should a South African be worried about that? The Rothschild bankers who kind of are wired into all of this. There's Lenin and his newspaper Iskra. There's the second oldest communist party on earth. There's a guy called Mandela. And there's a guy called Richard Stengel, who was Obama's propaganda czar. These things are all connected.
It's going to take some serious knitting needles to turn that into a sweater.
So, I wasn't too sure where on this pecking order one would start. And then there's the ever-present matter of South Africa. And, you know, the best way I can tell you that these things get wired together in my life is as follows. I did the completely innocent thing of telling my wife, let's save up some money. This is 2016, I believe. Let's save up some money. And no, it's earlier. It's 2014. And we're going to go on a riverboat trip on the Danube. You should do this once in your life because you can't afford to do it a second time.
And, good to know.
we got on this boat. And it's very nice, and it's one of these Viking cruises that you forever see advertised, and they are quite good. And the people on it were, the vast majority were Americans, and after the Americans came Canadians, and then after Canadians it was Australians, and after the Australians it was South Africans, many of whom were expats like ourselves. And they intentionally mix one so that you would meet different people at the dinner table. And this is how it would go. And you'll soon see what the problem is. You would sit down and you would politely, you know, start a conversation. But more typically, because Americans are quite voluble, it will be the American who speaks first. And the conversation would go something like this. So where are you folks from? We're from Canada. You don't sound Canadian. That's because we were born in South Africa. And then there'd be silence. And the next question would be, what do you think about Obama?
Really?
Wow.
That's literally how it went. Every single damn conversation. Okay, and I got up at the end of one of those dinners, and as I walked towards the stateroom, there was a gentleman. He was a Democrat, but he was a good one.
Okay,
they do exist, and he was from oh good heavens, the Granite State. What's it called again? New Hampshire.
Oh, New Hampshire.
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, why do I know this stuff? Anyway, he was from New Hampshire, a very nice guy. And I said, you know, your national colleagues don't seem to like your president much. And I said, I don't like the guy, and it's so intense at these dinners that I almost feel like I have to defend this guy that I can't stand. And he looked at me, and he stopped. And I remember it was on the staircase as we're going down. He stops, and this guy's tall. He's like 6'6". He turns around to me, and he stares down from me out of the clouds. And he says, Harry, you defend him, and they will hang you with him.
Oh, wow. I was just getting ready to ask you, what was the general census of
well, the great leader? The consensus was apparently over.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. It's already 1220. Hold that thought, Harry. Hold that thought. We have to take a quick break.
Somehow be from South Africa immediately led to questions about President Obama. So, you know, I've never been able to get away from stuff like that.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing considering he was from New Hampshire. So we got to take a break.
From New Hampshire.
We got to take a break real quick.
We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. We have not heard from him in forever. You can find him on the South Africa tab on WeThePeopleRadio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Who's to say I can't do everything? Well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone. We'll sing it.
There we go. Now we're back to the cruise ship. Back to the Danube, should I say. Cruise ship doesn't sound as good as Danube.
I'm done with a cruise ship now, and I think. But
that's so weird.
Yeah, that was quite an experience. And in the end, my wife told me, take a piece of paper, take a couple of scraps of paper, write the ISBN number of your book down on it, and the moment people ask you that question, tell them, here's a 635-page book. Just read it.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so, I guess first just a tad about me. I guess I have to speak about that. For my sins, I was born back in 1953 in sunny South Africa, the very southern tip of the continent, in a city called Port Elizabeth, which was sort of the Detroit of South Africa. All the car companies were there. Nobody in town was rich. And one day, my mother hoisted me on her arm. It was evening, and she walked me across to the grassy knoll that was diagonally across from our house. And yeah, I intentionally call it the grassy knoll.
We enjoyed it.
I know my Americans after all these years. So, and she hoisted me up and she pointed out a moving star to me. And that was so cool that I immediately dropped all ideas of becoming an F-86 fighter pilot or a train driver or a farmer like my father and my grandfather respectively wanted me to be. And I made up my mind that I wanted to be one of the guys who put that thing up there. My mother said they were scientists. And later, when they were talking about it at home, I saw that their eyes were looking quite big and they sounded scared and they said it was Russians. I didn't know whether those were very big tarantulas or what they were, but these Russians were supposed to be scary. And so all I knew was that Russians were scary. They put it up there, but there were scientists that were involved, and I wanted to be a scientist. So that's what I eventually turned out to be. But somewhere through my very early teen years, I was in a little kiddie gang like all boys are. And I was the science guy of the team. I couldn't figure out how to turn anybody into a superhero, and the spider bites I got didn't do a darn thing for me. So I started building crystal radios and stuff like that. Yeah. And so at the tender age of about 13, I was listening to Radio Moscow and Radio Peking and all these guys on radios that I'd built. So I got all of that stuff in one ear at a very tender age. At the same time, my mother worked at a publication distribution company, a magazine distribution company, and they distributed, amongst other things, Life and Time and Newsweek. And the copies they didn't sell that week, she'd bring them home at the end of the week, and so I had a never-ending supply of Time, Life, and Newsweek. So I grew up with that front page cover of Life magazine with John saluting the casket of his father. I grew up with that on my wall. And I remember how scared I was at the time of the missile crisis. And, you know, my family was not as clued up on nuclear weapons as I was. And so I was scared out of my wits while they were having, you know, a barbecue outside and drinking beer. I was standing scared inside. So I had probably a weird calibration as a kid in that I heard foreign propaganda stations way too early, but I could, even as a little kid, I could hear that this is rubbish. And I had all of this background on world events and stuff. And so that kind of calibrated me. So I eventually ended up as indeed a scientist, worked on things that go bump in the night. And eventually in the year 2000, we moved to Canada, where I first worked with an Israeli company that particularly liked hiring South Africans because we're a very technocratic nation and we have a can-do attitude, I guess, so I've been told, and ended up being taken over by big American corporations. I've learned what those are all about, and they don't seem to work out in the end. And eventually, one day, I heard or saw an article by actually an ex-South African newspaper guy, and it was horrific. It was saying that the murders of farmers in South Africa is justified.
Wow.
And that's a guy here in Canada.
Wow.
And that made me pick up my pen, and I started writing. It took me 7 years to put this tome together that I call Amabulu. It just means the farmer people. And it is basically the history of South Africa from the first shot to the last, ending in about 2012. So I put that all together on the basis that, okay, I'm going to die, but I'm sure as hell I'm going to make sure that this thing is written so that when everything eventually happens as it is absolutely ordained to happen, no one's going to be able to say, I didn't warn them.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell me, when did you write the book? It was like 10 years ago?
Well, I started around, I did a half-hearted start in 2006, and then this event with this guy happened, so I mentally switched on totally to it. And whilst doing a day job, I wrote this thing over a period of some 7 years. I also went to 7 different countries to collect the data. Mm. And I believe in evidence. I'm an actual real physicist. I'm a PhD physicist. I don't like lies. They have no place for a scientist. And because they come to get you eventually. even in science, don't tell the global warming people that, but it will come to bite them, and the bite is going to be serious.
Science is going to get real inconvenient at some point in time.
Yeah, I have some strong feelings that science is not meant to terrorize people with. It's supposed to help people and not terrorize them and not scare them out of their tax money, especially if the simple truth costs just $25 for an infrared thermometer. All you need to do is buy one of those pointed at the sky and see what it reads. You know, I'm so sick of this stuff, I can't handle it anymore. So I became this physicist. I ended up in Canada. I wrote this book, and for my sins, when people started reading this, I started getting contacted. And lo and behold, for example, by none other than Aaron and a slew of other people. And so I've been spending some of my time doing little interviews like this. Okay? And apparently I'm saying something that people are either terrified to hear or they're glad to hear it or whatever, but folks keep coming back.
It's really helpful because we are, the history of humankind was kept alive through storytelling.
Yeah, well, you can't see the forest if you're inside of it.
Yeah. You have to hear people who were on the ground, who have firsthand knowledge, and that's, you know, our world is filled right now with a lot of opinion. You know, the quote news is very much opinion oriented, and so we're very light on facts.
I have to make this little disclaimer at some point. One is, you know me by now, at some point I'm going to unhelpably get sarcastic, so I have to apologize.
I'm a big fan.
Because I really do understand that, as a famous English comedian said, don't tell sarcastic jokes to Americans. They don't like sarcasm and they carry guns.
but see, Harry, we cater to an audience that is smart, and the only reason people don't like sarcasm is because they're not smart enough to understand it or fight back. Actually, it could be one or both.
And then the other point is sort of a point of some exasperation on my part. I would like to make it clear that I am not uniquely intelligent. In fact, I can prove to you that my wife is more intelligent than I am, and she beat me at chess every time we played that thing, and in fact, she managed to crack a rib of mine in a chess game. But that was because I lost again, and I kind of stood up, and I roared at her in fun, but she put her knees up, and I walked straight into the knee and cracked my rib.
Wow.
So you guys
play pretty hard.
So I have, a cracked rib is testimony to the fact that my wife is more intelligent than I am. So much for he's a clever guy and he knows things because he's clever. Not true. Next, I don't have access to any information that other people do not have access to. The only thing that's weird or odd about me is that I grew up in South Africa and I've lived some of the stuff that the left in your country is playing with. Okay? That's all. I got exposed to this stuff the hard way. So it's not intelligence, it's not insight, it's none of these things. Okay, it's not because I'm a physicist. Anyway,
it is really useful though, because in order for us to make all these connections, and I always encourage people, go back and listen to the early shows that we did with you, explaining the parallels of American history, and we showed up so much farther behind. You guys had already been there and done that. And by the time we came on the scene, and it's still happening that way. Things are still ahead of us in South Africa, and we really can learn a lot. But I don't think people are watching that at all. They don't see that there's a parallel.
Well, they don't take the time to even study their own history.
Well, then there's that.
Let alone...
So what I would like to do is I'm going to make this connection for you in a different way from before.
Okay.
And what I'd like to do is I got this couple of drop-dead important historical facts about South Africa, which are probably weird for people. They're going to say, what? Okay, and I want them to say, huh? You serious? Okay, and it's 100% true, and you have not in the United States typically heard this, and you have been told almost the diametric opposite in most cases. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw the line through for you from the fact that you were misled about this to how you are being misled right now. Because, to a certain degree, it's the same guy who's doing it to you. Okay? And I will reveal his miserable identity. So, here are my drop-dead important historical facts. I had to put these together for a... I had like 25 minutes at a Red Pill conference some years ago, so I had to summarize these. Here's the first one. When the Dutch settled the Cape of Good Hope in 1652, the nearest black people were 700 miles away, behind the 350-millimeter summer rainfall line, with its higher rainfall and tall grass for cattle. Their civilization was based on milk, and they invaded from the northeast, supplanting the indigenous Khoi and Sun people. So, no, there were not black people on the beach when the Dutch landed at the Cape, okay? Just so everybody can hear that clearly. Number two, it actually took two generations from 1652 to 1702 before white and black met each other over land about 600 miles east of Cape Town. It took five generations until 1780 before the first major clash between black and white at that same spot, which is the Great Fish River. So, no black people on the beach when the Dutch got there, and in fact it took five generations between white and black clashed. No indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. Not Portuguese, not British, not Danish, not Swedish, not Spanish, not French. No one. However, Nelson Mandela's Amakosa people did enslave the Amafango. Mozambique and Angola were the nearest places where the Portuguese traded in slaves. But their slave routes bypassed the coast of South Africa. And that was because it's a stormy coast. They tried to avoid it. And their interaction with the Sun and Khoi people at the southern tip was so bad that they just avoided the place. Hmm. Then, for the fourth point, think about this. I've just told you that black South Africans were not enslaved by white men from anywhere. It is, in fact, the white South Africans, not the black ones, whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. I am an example. I have an Angolan ancestor called Isabella, back in the late 1600s, okay? These slaves were often Indian or Indonesian, but sometimes black from East or West Africa. And as I wrote here, this white author has a black West African slave ancestor. I'm the guy with a black slave ancestor, not Mandela. Okay? Right. Next, the indigenous Cape population were not the black people. It was the Khoi and the Sun people. As a culture, they were almost completely destroyed by the great smallpox epidemic of 1730.
And where did they originate in South Africa?
There's a whole bunch of DNA studies around this, because it's been a mystery to everybody. And the DNA seems to suggest that they have a connection to the sort of Ethiopia area, whereas the black people of South Africa have a connection to Nigeria, Cameroon, those places.
Okay.
But the interesting thing for anyone listening is that show some respect for the Sun people, that are some of the most primitive on Earth, and they are likely the ancestors of every one of us. They have the oldest, broadest DNA base on the planet.
Wow.
They exhibit every trait exhibited by every other form of humanity.
Hmm.
So if you're looking for epicanthic folds on the eyes, you'll find that with them.
And how big of a culture or civilization was that?
Bill, I couldn't quite hear that. You're a bit soft for me.
How big of a culture or civilization were those people at that time?
They were the Sun were and are hunter-gatherers. They live in family clans. They never really got out of the Stone Age.
Okay.
There are no structures that they built anywhere. They live by breaking up camp and moving to the next one. Or at least they did until late in the last century. To a large degree, they were wiped out by the black people. And somehow, with some intermixture, the Khoi people, who were indeed the ones at the Cape when the Dutch arrived, the Khoi are the nearest DNA neighbors to the Sun.
Okay.
If there's a book by a guy called Spencer Wells, he did the original work on this, and he went all over the planet tracing people, trying to find the route back to where did it all start, and eventually at the end of this whole odyssey of his, he ends up with a Sun Bushman in South Africa.
No kidding.
Interesting.
When we come back, yeah. I want you to tell people about the distinction, because like in this country we had an evolution from Negro through colored to black, and those all meant basically the same thing.
Yeah.
It was just what was considered appropriate at the time. I guess just to make a short answer of it. But in South Africa, that's not true. Those mean different things.
I'll explain that for you. If I could quickly just finish my short list of drop-dead points. Then I'll get into what do these words mean in South Africa.
No worries.
And how they connect to these Khoi and Sun.
All right. We're going to come. We have to take a really quick break. We'll come right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillens. And we're chatting about South Africa. You can find all the shows we've done with him, along with lots of other topics, as a matter of fact. 14 years worth of topics at We the People Radio.
.us.
Tomorrow. Okay. Back to your list.
So I've given you five of the drop-dead important points about South Africa. I got four more.
Okay.
The first is that since 1814, the white Afrikaner, which is the same as a white Amerikaner or American, has had no right of return to Europe, unlike the colonial Portuguese, colonial British, colonial French. So today's Afrikaner's great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was the last man with any right of return. In 1836, they were deserted by their British overlords, packed their ox wagons, put their family Bibles on the back, sometimes they put the piano on the back, and they set off into darkest Africa to get away from British control. This is the moment at which I tell you guys, we never managed to do that. And now you know how it turns out when you don't. You have no idea how lucky you are that you won your war. So they settled mostly on the higher central prairie country, mostly not occupied by black people. And there they had their two corn and ranching republics until diamonds and gold were discovered, at which case the British very quickly developed a great concern for people in the neighborhood and had to come in and protect them. Right? That's how they always do it.
Yep.
Okay. The Afrikaner was not part of Europe's late 1800s scramble for Africa when they colonized the entire Africa. My guys gave their lives fighting Imperial Britain's colonial expansion in two different wars. We won the first, we lost the second. The Germans did not invent concentration camps. The British did. They invented them for us in the Great Boer War of 1899 to 1902. Of my Boyan's family who entered those camps, 57% died there in 1901. Okay, now, none of this was known to Americans before. Well, take this with a grain of salt, but I'm saying largely all of this is unknown to Americans until Mandela appeared on the scene in the very late 1980s and early 90s, and there was a book called Long Walk to Freedom, and Mandela was then trotted out for the world as being this angel of peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody wanted to find out something, and suddenly everybody's an expert on South Africa, and they know what's going on, and ooh, it's just like America, and parallels are drawn that are not parallels. And suddenly, I'm accused of everything that an American has a guilty conscience about. Okay? So, I took note of that at the time, but I also didn't realize where this would ultimately lead at that time. Now, that book, I have it here. And believe me, every liberal leftist in the world has a copy of it because they read that instead of the Bible. And its name is Long Walk to Freedom. Just give me a second here.
Well, even today, Mandela is seen as the savior of...
Oh, yeah.
That opinion has never changed.
Anger and sorrow, love and joy, grace and elegance, says the Daily News, etc. The riveting memoir of the outstanding moral and political leader of our time. Okay. Great. Now, unlike all those guys who keep it as an unread showpiece on their mantelpiece and in their lounge to show off to their other liberal friends, I read the darn thing. And there's a lot in there, but interestingly, there's something that wasn't in there. And that was the fact that he was a member of the Central Committee of the South African Communist Party.
Hmm.
That was amazingly absent. In fact, any indication that he was into the communist thing was carefully missing from this. So I should have realized this at the time, but it only struck me many years later, around 2013, just before Mandela died. Somebody found, of all places, in the Mandela Memorial Library, they found the original notes for the book. And in it, he clearly wrote about what his communist convictions were and what his role was. But it's not in the book. So you start asking yourself, but how did that disappear? And you realize that if that had been left in the book, whoever was the ghostwriter, knew that Americans wouldn't buy Mandela.
Yeah, he would have been tainted.
With such direct communist eyes, no ways could he be portrayed as the saint they required him to be. And so his communist activities were erased from the book. That raises the question, who is the author? Who is the ghostwriter for Mandela? So that takes a bit of homework until you realize that he's capitalizing on that and he's walking around very proud about it. And in fact, Mandela was the godfather to his one child. And his name is Richard Stengel, S-T-E-N-G-E-L, Stengel. And Richard Stengel, at one point, worked at Time magazine and became, ultimately, editor at Time magazine. He became the boss. And, subsequently, he became an organizer for Obama, and then he was appointed. Wait, I gotta get you this title because it's so cool. Under Secretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. Now, Richard Stengel himself described himself as Obama's propaganda czar. So, are you starting to wonder why things twisted a certain way? This guy is still in your woodwork. He's the man in charge of something known as NewsGuard. You may want to look up NewsGuard in Wikipedia, but please be careful because the boss of Wikipedia is also on NewsGuard. How cool.
Not going to be too biased.
Okay,
huh.
So you cannot believe a damn thing you read until you first checked out who's writing. So
right.
NewsGuard is based in New York City, says Wikipedia. His advisors include former officials such as Tom Ridge of Homeland Security, Richard Stengel, former Undersecretary for State and Public Diplomacy, Michael Hayden, former CIA Director, Anders Fogh Rasmussen, former NATO Chief, and Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales, just so as you know. Okay? And what NewsGuard does is it basically tells your media what to say and not say, more particularly what to not say. Like maybe it shouldn't talk about Hunter Biden's laptop. Maybe it should never talk about Burisma. Maybe it shouldn't question, you know, any injections associated with COVID. Maybe you should not have an article saying that this thing bred out in Wuhan. Maybe. Are you getting me yet?
Yeah, because, well, the whole Wuhan thing, yeah. Super inconvenient. That I mean, we were doing interviews with Chinese scientists in February of 2020 who absolutely confirmed that it was a lab leak. And it's like, how could we possibly know this and the rest of the world somehow doesn't? Yeah, unlikely.
But, Aaron, you see, and here is where I have to put my little asterisk on the screen that says, careful sarcasm, okay? We don't have to worry. Richard Stengel is out there watching out for us. Okay? Mm. He has only your best interests at heart.
I feel so much better.
I lost my country because of him.
Wow.
Okay? And you're going to lose yours because of him.
And he is absolutely flying under the radar at this point.
Is absolutely flying under the radar. He is viciously effective. He's well-spoken. He knows what he's doing. Okay? And I don't think Americans can go into this election, particularly not Republicans. They can't go into this election without knowing who this guy is. Okay, so
yeah.
I did something very interesting, which I thought you guys would find fascinating.
Oh, and you know, I want you to know that... Since I'm reading your mind, I posted that. We have to jump out of here because we're going to get killed by the news here. But when we come right back, I know where we're headed, and looking forward to it. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyans. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt. Doing bad things to you.